Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Whether sending your child to college next year or in 18 years, invest in their future with Busey. Busey, your dream, our promise.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 9th day of November 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll visit with Nutrien Ag Solutions. That's a company that purchased Agrible earlier in the year. I caught up with them here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City and asked what their plans might be and just exactly who Nutrien might be. You'll be surprised by some of those answers. And then as we wrap up our time together, we will talk with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible about the forecast for right here in the United States and across the planet as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Friday afternoon. December corn down 3¾ today, finished at $3.69¾. The March down 4 cents at $3.81¼, and May at $3.89¼. Four lower. July futures in the corn pit down 3¼ at $3.96. And the December, that's the new crop at $4.02½, down 2¾. November beans up 7¾ today. They finished at $8.75¼. January at $8.86¾, 7¾ higher. The March up 8 at $9 even. May at $9.13¼ up 8. July 8¼ higher at $9.26½. And November beans next year, your new crop at $9.36½, 5¼ lower. Bean oil futures down 40 cents, $27.62. The settlement price, the bean meal at $3.05.60, down 50 cents for the day. Wheat futures soft red. December down 5¾, settled at 5.02. July at 5.26, down 13¾ for the harvest month. And the hard red July finished 10¾ lower at $5.33¾. Live cattle futures in Chicago nearby December down $1.97½ at $114.57½ for 100 pounds. February at $117.80, down $2.07½. And the November feeder cattle, $1.17½ lower, finished at $149 even. January futures at $143.80, down $2.47½. Lean hogs, $55.80, up 17½ on the afternoon. Outside markets show the crude oil at $60.16 a barrel, down 51 cents. Ethanol down a penny and 3/10 at $1.25.6 per gallon. Heating oil about unchanged at $2.17.6. That's diesel fuel and gasoline on the RBOB, the wholesale price for the day. 2 cents lower at $1.62¾. Natural gas at $3.71½, 17½ cents higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 25,920, down 280 points. The U.S. dollar at 96.755, down 2.3, or rather up 2.05. And the S&P 500, 38 points lower, 2770 for the afternoon. The gold futures at $1,209.80, down $15.30. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. A 30% chance of snow showers. That'll come before 8 p.m., cloudy during the evening, gradually clearing off. We'll have a low of just 18 degrees tonight. West-northwest winds at 15 to 18 miles an hour. With a really gusty wind, it'll be at about 20 miles an hour. Sunny skies tomorrow. The high, just 32. West-northwest winds at 5 to 14. Saturday, mostly cloudy, and a low of 24. For Veterans Day, that's Monday, mostly sunny, a high of 42 degrees. South-southwest winds at 8 to 11 miles an hour. And Sunday evening, cloudy, a low of 27 degrees. Monday, during the day, a high of 37. And mostly cloudy Monday night, mostly cloudy, and will drop to 21.
Support for agricultural weather on WILL comes from Busey. With 150 years of agribusiness expertise, Busey's team is committed to providing resources to today's producers. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Mike Zuzulo is now here from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. Yesterday, we had a big USDA report, and the soybeans, as we're talking midday here, are up. This despite the fact that we have a nearly billion bushel carryout. Why is that the case?
The biggest question today, I know you're traveling in Kansas City, Todd. I'm in close to Wichita at the Kansas Beef Conference, and between the phone calls and the comments at the floor here at the conference, that's definitely the biggest question. I think it's because of the fact that you have a couple things with the technicals. The funds didn't follow through after the report. The Argentine rainfall totals are starting to go up. Key areas of Argentina looking at 6 to 10 inches of rain over the next 5 days is what the latest model runs are saying. That's, you know, within the next couple, 3 days of that starting. And so they feel pretty confident this is going to be a big rain event, not a good rain event from a time perspective, and could wash out some newly planted fields and really cause some havoc with maybe even the wheat and the, but especially the soybeans. So I would suggest to you that we're knee-jerk reacting in the soybeans with the weather. And I think we're also coming back around and trading the Chinese data that USDA threw upon us in the wheat and in the corn, and we're unwinding some spread action that way, making the beans look better. I would suggest, though, that the upside's probably pretty limited in the soybeans without us closing above 885. How do you get to that? Close above 885. I think the grains either need to turn around or we get some kind of announcement from President Trump and President Xi.
Well, and that would have to come fairly quickly, and it seems unlikely. I was talking or in a interview yesterday with Greg Dowd, and he was asked directly. He didn't give us much indication that he thought a settlement was coming soon. What do you hear?
Well, I think that's the conventional wisdom, but, you know, conventional wisdom hasn't done very good under President Trump's administration. I think one thing you have on your side at this point from an agriculture standpoint is probably the desire to move more quickly by President Trump since the midterm elections. The downside of this is obviously the dollar rallying and rallying nicely, and this is, again, why the wheat, I think, is getting a hit today at mid-session. We've essentially gone from a one-month high in the Russian ruble to a one-month low just in the last 5-6 hours. That's the power of funds. That's the power of the currencies. The Russian ruble's down about 1.5% right now, and the U.S. dollar is just inches away from its October high of 97.02. That was also a 16-month high. I think you have the Federal Reserve policy combined with the midterm elections and talking about gridlock in Washington. Maybe Wall Street likes gridlock, but I don't think commodities and currencies do.
Your assessment of the corn market?
I think the corn, had not it been for the Chinese corn data, corn probably would have had double-digit gains and likely hit my 385 target. I'm worried that's in jeopardy. Wheat is back as the leader again in the corn because of the currencies. Wheat had a very good report from an Australian perspective, lost production there. Had it not been for China's production increases in wheat, we would have had a bigger decline. We're still down about 4% from last year for global wheat production, but it could have been a lot bigger. But my sense is corn has limited downside and that the cash market is going to be probably the one that holds the most firm. And the funds are going to have to figure out whether this Chinese corn number, all these Chinese corn supplies are going to be accessible to the export market or not, and how they're going to handle that in the algo fund trading.
And finally, because you're at a beef conference, kind of give me a quick update of what you've been telling them.
Yeah, we just started here this morning. They're having the main conference right now as far as the Cattlemen's Association, but clearly on the sidelines as we've been setting up, the fear is that we're going to have a really tough 2019 in the beef cattle industry because production numbers are going to be peaking for the year in 2018, and it's going to be extra big in 2019. So that's probably the biggest concern I'm hearing, and rightfully so, because it does look like that wall of meat still out there to get us.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us.
Enjoy your trip, and hope you have a safe one.
You have safe travels, too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Don't forget to pick up those tickets to the Farm Assets Conference at farmassetsconference.com. Well, you know, earlier this year, Nutrien bought Agrible. You know that name because we talked to Eric Snodgrass, agricultural meteorologist, each and every Friday afternoon on the Closing Market Report. However, you might not be as familiar with the Nutrien name, and I caught up with them at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention to ask just who they are or were, and exactly what their plans were to do with Agrable and some of the things that you may not know that Agrable does, because we really only talk about the meteorology part. Thanks so much. Brent Smith is with us from Nutrien. Tell me a little bit about the company, Nutrien, and who you are and who you were and why Illinois farmers should be familiar with you.
Sure. Thanks, Todd. So Nutrien was formed out of the merger of Agrium and Potash, both Canadian-based companies. And so that happened early January this year. As a retail side of the business, we're known for many different names. In the U.S., Crop Production Services, or CPS, same in Canada, but we had various names around the world. And so this was a chance for us, number one, to align to the Nutrien name, two, to consolidate sort of all of these different brands of retail companies that we've had around the world. So we became Nutrien Ag Solutions for our retail for our 1,600 locations globally, 900 in the U.S., in July. But it also gave us a chance to redefine what the retailer of the future is. And so when you talk about Agrable and how Agrable fits into Nutrien Ag Solutions' digital aspirations, we've really started our digital journey in earnest about a year and a half ago. We launched our customer portal in July of this year to coincide with the name change. And we've now got about 30% of our business in the U.S. that is signed up in our customer portal. So that's really important and really happy with those numbers coming in a very short period of time. Agrable was acquired and really fits into our digital platform from a few different ways. Number one, it accelerates what our digital capabilities are going to be by about 2 or 3 years, because they had done a lot of the work. Number two, they have a lot of content. You mentioned the meteorology piece of it, and that's one piece of it, but they have a lot of other depth of content. And what we're trying to create with our digital experience is really pair that with our traditional brick and mortar, the relationship with the people at our locations, and create this omni-channel experience. And it's all about creating a better experience for our growers. Number three, Agrable has a really great sustainability platform, and what they've done a really good job of is tying the food companies, so going downstream from a grower and the pressures that they have from retail or consumers and food companies to hit different mandates. Agrable is working with those food companies, and what Agrable was excited about with us is certainly the scale that Nutrien Ag Solutions is able to provide, the relationship that we have with growers around the country, and we'll be able to connect those dots. So from a sustainability platform, it really becomes an important component for us, and one of the things that attracted us to Agrable.
So this marries the data science of mining that data from Agripol's perspective. I think this is the case, sometimes with remote sensing, sometimes with other aspects, to Nutrien or Potash Corporations. We actually know what was put on the ground in certain places, and those two can be put together to provide a feedback to both the producer and potentially the end user of the product.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Todd. And what we're trying to do, so you talk a little bit about the traceability component of sustainability, and that's extremely important. What we're trying to do with our whole digital and traditional, or what we call omni-channel experience, is really tie an integrated platform together. There's a lot of great technologies that are out there for growers. The problem with a lot of those is they have to then take those individual pieces and individual streams of information, make a decision, but then they have to then make multiple decisions and tie all that together. What we're trying to do is bring a funnel of information that can tie decisions throughout the crop planting, in-season, life cycle of a crop, and they can make all of those decisions and have an integrated platform to do that. And also to give our employees the better tools to be able to work with their customers, the grower, to make those decisions.
And how will the end user take advantage of that? On the end user of the product, on the other end, so the food companies.
Yeah, so the food companies, the benefit for the food companies is they're going to have all of these components all on one platform. And so a grower, and they're going to have the traceability piece of it. We're going to help the food company hit their mandate. So when a food company goes to a grower and says, these are the mandates that we have for you to be a grower for our company, we as a retailer can go in and help that grower hit all of those mandates. And so we play an important component for our customer, the grower, but also for the food company to help the grower hit those mandates.
Does Nutrien aspire to make this metadata available, and I'll call it metadata, or the data points available in a standardized system? Because it seems like this is the way the whole of agriculture is moving for not only the niche market products, the non-GMOs, the organics, but for regular commodity products. And that data would need to move through the system in some standardized form. ADM, Cargill, Louis Dreyfus have all gotten together and said, we're going to use blockchain and think about this. These are all related subjects.
Yeah, they really are. And I won't speak specifically to blockchain, but that's certainly a way you can tie things and have a documented from start to finish throughout this whole supply chain of a crop. And so I think as an industry, we're going to have some level of standardization, because there's so many different components, whether you're retail or you're the grower, you're the food company or the grain company, you're a basic manufacturer of seed or chem, you're going to have some level of standardization on how you tie that information together. So I think eventually it probably goes there. That's a broader conversation than just Nutrien Ag Solutions, but we're happy to have that conversation with the other leaders in the industry.
Where do people go if they're wanting to learn and see more? Will Agrible be a standalone with inside Nutrien? Will parts of it be absorbed within the company under the Nutrien flag?
Yeah, so anybody can go, obviously, to NutrienAgSolutions.com to find more information out about us. They can go to one of our 900 locations that are in their rural communities and learn more about it. As far as what we do with Agrible is a key component, which I've already mentioned, to our overall digital strategy and what that digital platform is going to be. And we're, again, trying to have one integrated experience for our grower. And so I think what you're going to see is, Agrible and our digital platform combining and integrating to create that one experience for a grower.
Thanks so much, Brent.
Yep. Thank you, Todd.
Brent Smith is with Nutrien Ag Solutions.
Hey, speaking of Agrible, Eric Snodgrass is now here with the weather forecast. Thanks, Eric. Kind of cold out there. What'd you see over the last 24 hours?
Well, Todd, so last night we had our second snow of the season right here in central Illinois, and this one actually stuck around a little bit. You know, it's kind of funny. I actually stayed up and waited for it. I was up working late, and I just kind of kept checking outside to see when that rain was going to finally switch over. And that system kind of spread out through parts of Kansas, came across Missouri, and then got us right here in central Illinois last night. And some of the leaves that are sitting on the ground and the taller grass, and of course the trees, got a nice little coating of some crusty snow this morning. But still, our ground temperatures are too warm to really support any major accumulation. Well, that was just system number one that we're watching right now coming across the U.S. And here's the overall setup we have to discuss. We have this deeper trough that's stuck in the midsection of the country that just kind of keeps reloading with cooler air on its backside. And every time it does this, we get these little short waves that kind of swing around the backside of that upper level trough and then kick on out to the east. And each time they do that, we get the upper level support we need to make another low pressure system. So over the weekend, higher pressure is going to move in while we wait on the next low pressure system. And as it does so, we're going to be seeing some very, very cold air. We've got right now hard freeze warnings out to our south. You know, we've already had a good hard freeze here, but we're going to be seeing temperatures around here getting deep into the 20s. And in fact, you go to the northern Corn Belt, they're going to be seeing some single digit temperatures as we move through the night tonight and into the day tomorrow morning on Saturday. So some really cold air tucked into that trough. But let's get to that next system. So we get a drier time period in the short term after this whole first system lifts out. Second one starts to dig in by the time we get past the weekend, and maybe by Monday and Tuesday, we're watching for this one to push through and maybe give us another chance at snow. Now, when we have to think about the position of this next trough, it's very tricky because we as meteorologists have to pay attention to the orientation of the trough. And this particular trough has what we call a positive tilt to it. Now, what does that mean? If you kind of look at the long axis of the trough, it looks like a forward slash. If you think about it like a keystroke on your keyboard, a forward slash. So it's going to dig hard south, but that means it's going to push a lot of its precipitation toward the south and then eventually toward the northeast, rather than having a negative tilt like a backslash, which would swing a big area of that precipitation through us here in the Midwest and also give us a whole lot more snow. As it stands, this one will dig far enough south, but because it's got that forward slash look to it, that positive tilt, it looks like a lot of the heavier precipitation will stay to the south of Illinois at this point. And what I mean by that is, as a little snow band begins to develop, probably in the panhandles of Oklahoma and Texas, it'll spread through parts of Kansas and Missouri and potentially into parts of Illinois, but mainly going to be looking at the southern half of Illinois before really kind of getting much stronger once it moves into the Ohio River Valley and then into the Great Lakes states and up into the north. East. So we do have another chance at snow coming to us early next week, but that's where things begin to change. You see, with time, we will be watching next week for that deep trough that's been sitting over us for several days, finally kicking out. We have a shift in the overall flow such that we're going to break down the big ridge out west, which is going to let the whole system get unblocked and move that trough toward Greenland. So what's the translation of that? Well, this active weather pattern that we have been in is finally going to be transitioning such that a ridge slowly starts to creep across the United States and such, maybe by the time we get into the 16th, 17th, 18th, we could go back toward what I would call more normal temperatures and maybe even at times above average temperatures. So remember, though, we're getting these above average temperatures now here at the at the middle to end of November, and that's still going to be cold for us around here. But that's a pretty big shift, and because of that, that's going to translate the more active part of the jet stream to our east. So we can actually see more drier than average conditions as we push throughout the next 15 days. Now that, of course, is after the system that's coming through right now. So pretty big adjustment in the flow. Now, if we look at the long term, remember we're paying close attention to what's going on in the central and north Pacific, that Modokai El Nino that's developing. We did get some brand new model runs that just came out, kind of giving us an idea, another idea about what we're going to see for our winter precipitation and winter temperatures. And here it is kind of in a nutshell. We do expect to have a pretty active storm track from Texas across the south and then up the northeast. And that's because overall, we think that this winter, when we kind of average it all together, will more often than not feature a broader ridge out west with a plunge trough somewhere starting in the central to eastern third of the country. Now, what does all that mean? That means that we could probably look back at the end of this upcoming winter and see that the west probably was mild, a little bit warmer than normal. The central United States will be this transition zone, and the southeast especially will probably have near average to cooler than average weather and will more than likely be wetter than average. What's got me concerned is this particular flow pattern may mean that throughout much of winter, when you put it all together and average it, will probably be drier than normal here across much of the middle part of the country. Now, the good news is we're going into this winter without any widespread drought. The other thing that forecast means, though, as we look down at South America, it looks as though the far northern growing regions in Brazil could also be getting drier, but Mato Grosso do Sul, also talking about Goiás and the Tocantins, they could be wetter than average, which means big yields. Brazil's southern growing regions, well, the new model runs suggest that they could be drier than average, but Argentina, thankfully, looks like it'll be wet. And I say thankfully because remember last year with La Nina, they had a massive drought. So we got some bigger shifts coming in here in the short term and in the long term we're going to have to pay attention to. And that's why I like talking to you every Friday. We can just keep everybody up to date on those major shifts.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio for the farming world. Do pick up those tickets for the Farm Assets Conference just a week and a couple of days away now at willag.org, farmassetsconference.com. They're just $40, 800-898-1065.
It's National Scrapple Day. Scrapple is traditionally a mush of pork scraps, cornmeal, and flour, and is arguably the first pork food invented in America. On this day in agricultural history in 1801, American manufacturer Gale Borden was born. He invented a commercial method for condensing milk by heating it in a vacuum. He also created a meat biscuit of cooked meat extracts and flour that was capable of long-term storage. He was the founder of the New York Condensed Milk Company, which in 1968 became Borden. In 1891, George Hormel opened his meat packing house in Austin, Minnesota. To make ends meet in those early days, Hormel continued to trade in hides, eggs, wool, and poultry. In 1911, George Claude applied for a patent for an electric neon sign. In 1938, Edward Murray East died, an American botanist and chemist. He contributed to genetic theory and to the development of hybrid corn by applying inbred strain breeding, what was then a revolutionary method of seed production. Specifically, he concentrated on controlling the protein and fat content of possible hybrids. East also studied the genetics and breeding of tobacco and potatoes. And in 1965, at 5:15 p.m., a 13-hour blackout of the northeastern U.S. and parts of Canada began when the electric grid failed. And that's this day in agricultural history.
We're now joined by Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, to take up the cash grain market. Kind of an interesting report. The Chinese numbers coming from USDA, the changes they made, I don't know whether they'll have much of an impact or not, but it's true monkey wrench into the trade's thinking about what was around the world in corn. Can you give me kind of your assessment of where we are today and what this all means?
Yeah, I mean, whenever you first look at the report and you see a 178.9 on corn yield, you think, man, we're going to be up 20 cents. That wasn't expected. Average trade guess of 180. Bean yield 52.1. Obviously, the carry on beans was plenty to put out the flame there. But you look at the carry on corn, and carry down at 173, that's friendly. Yeah, everything about the corn report was friendly other than the world numbers, which was a wet blanket enough for about anything you could throw at it. So, 307 million metric ton for world stocks. We've always known these Chinese stocks were out there, but it's been a really hard time to get a handle on exactly what they were. Earlier in the year, we had heard that the Chinese stocks were around 200 million metric ton. If you're paying attention, they've auctioned off 80 million metric tons since then.
Yeah, and as the soybean numbers go, 90 million bushel drop in total production. However, carryout increased 70 million bushels. How did they do that?
Well, I mean, obviously, with this soybean, you're looking at this demand situation. USDA is saying, we don't know that we're going to export any soybeans to speak of compared to what we have in the past. You look at the numbers we're currently looking at, and obviously demand is an issue. And so, you drop the yield, but the demand's not there to take care of this situation. 955 could end up ballooning to a billion fairly easily, I would say. But it all comes down to demand. And so, whenever you get a tweet that drives the market higher, like we saw last week, it shows you how hypersensitive this market is to any demand related news. But bottom line is, even with China coming back in, the carry for this crop isn't going to be anything like what we've seen the last several years. And so, you might take 955 down a couple of 300, but it's still going to be a very large carryout number for this year, even if we do get some things worked out with China.
Anything that producers should be considering as it relates to the 2019 crops?
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly take a look. I mean, I'm fairly friendly corn at this juncture, but today definitely makes you stop and think a little bit. 406 corn is what I'm staring at right now, and that's a pretty good price for corn. And most people didn't start last year at 406 by any means. A lot of folks started in the 390s. 406 for a first sale is a really good place to look. As far as no beans for next year, you're in this 925 to 935 range. 928 is, I believe, where we're at currently. And I don't think that that's anything that's going to get a guy too excited. But I think if you push closer to the 940, 950 level, where a lot of folks in our part of the world can most likely look at with a normal basis, $9 beans out of the field, I think people take a little bit closer look there. But I'm certainly not started on beans yet.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Yeah, thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois.